remind us of our strength, our birthright. Grant us an awareness of your presence moving with us, in us, around us, and through us. May the words of my mouth and the reflections and meditations of all of our hearts be beautiful in your eyes. Amen. Amen.
Amen.
I am male, I am female. I am man and I am woman. I am both and I am neither. And I am everything and everyone in between and all around. I am humanity. And I have seen it all. I am as old as dirt. In fact, that's where I came from. That's how I was made, with dirt. Humanity speaks. The garden. Ah, those were the days, running around naked with God. Before anything else, God called creation good. And God blessed us, humanity, and called us very good. The word's original sin weren't even batted about until about 1,500 years ago, by my reckoning, just a blink of the eye, by a human named Augustine. Augustine said many, many good and admirable things, and some called him a saint. But he also had issues. Issues with, you know, his sexuality, his abundant desires and passionate fires. They were well known. Apparently, he could not leave women alone. They tempted him mightily, and he yielded at every opportunity. You know, when he became a Christian, it's well said that his prayer was, God, give me chastity, but not yet. So I suppose it comes as no surprise that what he sorted out of the Genesis story was something called original sin, a condition into which he said humanity is born with the heavy weight of guilt and consequence. Now, I think Rachel Held Evans, her wisdom applies here, that what we read into the creation narrative says more about us and reveals more about us than it does about the text. For there is also equal room in many beautiful books written on the thought of original blessing. Original blessing. That we are created and born beautiful and blessed. I like that very much. So where was I? Oh, yes, running around naked with God. Then there was that bit of business with the fruit. And just so you know, an apple was never mentioned. It was fruit. Fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now that fruit could have been a pomegranate. Or it could have been a tomato. But someone somewhere decided that it was an apple. And that shows the power of hearsay and rumor among us, humanity. How a story can be altered, misinterpreted in very powerful ways. And the way misunderstanding, opinion, prejudice, and misogyny can be formed and inbred, grafted into humanity's greatest stories. Because the next thing you know, the apple was just everywhere. In our art, in our stories, in our paintings and sculptures, even on our computers.
Yes.
With the bite taken out of it. Anyway, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, it was knowledge. And it was awareness. It was humanity's education about good and evil. Not just one, but good and evil. The kind of intellect that comes at the expense of innocence. Yes, call it the loss of our innocence. That's not really a bad thing, is it? It happens to all of us at one time or another, sometimes to some of us repeatedly. We enter a place of greater knowledge about life, greater discovery at the expense of our innocence. Suddenly we feel, I don't know, naked, very vulnerable, open, exposed to the elements of knowledge and reality about the world and about ourselves. Eve saw that the tree and the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, she saw that it was attractive. It was pretty. And she wanted to know more. She wanted to learn. Is that a sin? Knowledge? Some people seem to think so, and they advocate ignorance at each and every turn, as if it's something to be celebrated, when instead the real journey is to regain our innocence in spite of our intelligence. That's a big deal. Regain our innocence in spite of our intelligence. And there's a name for that. It's called enlightenment. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Eve got the short shrift of this story. And her role in the story is so small, it's so little dialogue, such a little part, painfully little. And yet she is arguably the most influential woman in the Bible. If influential means that this story impacted just about everything about every woman in the Bible that came to follow. And that this brief little story echoes down through history and the lives of just about every woman on earth. In fact, this story has haunted women. And while there was a curse given by Yahweh, a curse for the man, a curse for the woman, and a curse for the snake, the actual story itself has been the curse in many ways. Because whether you believe this story literally, metaphorically, or not at all, its impact on humanity and women cannot be denied. Now, the curse that I speak of occurs after the man goes, what? Eating that forbidden fruit? Hey, don't blame me. Not my fault, God. It's the woman that you put here. She did it to me. She made me do it. And then the woman goes, don't look at me. The snake did it. The snake made me do it. And then God kind of throws up metaphorical hands and said, okay, you get a curse. She gets a curse. The snake gets a curse. Everybody gets a curse. Now, the snake is cursed to be a belly crawler. Its offspring will bite humans, and thus the offspring of humans will usually be looking for it to kill it. The curse for the man is to work. Work the ground hard for food, the very dirt from which we were made, and then eventually to return to it. God said, from the dirt you were made, to the dirt you will return, which neatly explains the whole carbon-based life form life cycle. And as for the woman, well, women would be cursed with the pain of childbirth, pain of creation. It could have been worse. Oh, wait, it was. And men ruling over her. That was part of the curse, too. And so this beautiful story has been used as both an explanation and a justification for the subordination and subjugation of women. The curse goes on and on, generation to generation, and it's all because of Eve, who wanted to gain some knowledge. And still, to this day, in too many parts of the world, all too many women have to work and struggle for an education. Knowledge and learning are forbidden to them. forbidden fruit out of their reach. You know that there are actually two creation stories in Genesis with regard to humans, women in particular. And this has impact on history as well. In the first, God said, let us make humanity in our image. That's me. Let us make humanity in our image. Male and female, let us make them. So, both created at the same time, both clearly in the image of God. The second creation story, however, has God creating man first and then creating woman from a part of the man's side. Yes, from the man's side. Translations, whether linguistically or culturally, will almost always trip you up. Because while that has all too often been translated as from the man's rib, good Bibles will clearly, either in parenthesis or by footnote, say that the woman was created from the man's side. So ponder that little shift in the creation story, considering the belief that woman was created from a part of the man or created from the side of the man, side by side. Side by side. That blends well with the next mistranslation. Specifically, in what version can you take a guess?
King James.
King James, very good. The King James Version. Quote, it's not good for the man to be alone. I will make a help meet for him. Help meet. H-E-L-P-M-E-E-T. Help meet. What on earth is that? Well, it's a bad translation, that's what it is. And fundamentalist communities have gone to great lengths to explain exactly what that is, what a helpmeet is. And what they explain it to be is an obedient subordinate. When in fact, the original Hebrew word used is ezer kenegdo. And the usage of the word ezer, all through the Bible, denotes strength and power. And it even has warrior implications. The phrase is always translated as a strong partner, equal. One who is side by side. One who is an ally. Not an adversary or a subordinate, but an ally. And so in the mistranslation of that phrase, women have been robbed of their birthright of strength. Strength, equality, and partnership. Through misunderstanding and a bad translation. You don't suppose it was intentional, do you? Anyway, Adam and Eve were driven from the Garden of Eden, that place of perfection ruled by innocence, and thus by grace of what so many call the fall, humanity was born. We were born. And Eve was called life giver. And we started hiding. And we are still hiding from God. As we left Eden, one preacher said that God whispered, I am coming for you. I am coming for you. We heard it as a threat. And so we ran. And we still hear it as a threat, especially people in marginalized communities. But rather than a threat, it is a promise. It's a promise. God is searching for us, seeking us, hungry for us. And each time we are forgiven, each time God forgives us for the ways that we run away from God, and there are so many of them. Each time God forgives us, God is saying, relationship with us is more important than any law or rule. Relationship with us. For nothing can ever separate us from the love of God. And no one, not even our worst enemy, is outside the love of God. And so we had better start making peace with one another. Because we still hide from God. And we still hide from ourselves with a whole host of fig leaves to cover our insecurities. False personas, masks, lies, work, drugs, alcohol, all sorts of coverings and wardrobes that hide us from ourselves and from each other and keep us from knowledge, keep us from enlightenment, and keep us from our strength. So to the woman and to the women of today, I say, reclaim your creation right. Live it, claim it. You are life givers. Seekers of knowledge, you give life to humanity. And understand, this is a birthright to all of humanity, all of us. And it transcends any gender declared at birth. We are all, each one of us, life givers, giving birth to the new. And we are all, each one of us, full of possibilities. And men, gay and straight, misogyny or hatred and fear of women, it is the root of gay bashing and homophobia. Women are universally marginalized, and anytime women are lifted up as equals, then you benefit just as much as women do. We, humanity, all of us, we embody it all. We are all life givers. Men, women, male, female, and everything in between. All life givers. What matters is having that knowledge and that awareness. And biting into the fruit that opens our eyes makes us vulnerable and starts the whole ball rolling forward out of the place of perfection and into the real world. I need my glasses for some of this. Like I said, I'm old as dirt. We have to overcome our vulnerability, our insecurities. We have to face our nakedness, not with drugs, alcohol, or false personas, or cheap wardrobes of false power and lies, but with our own strength, our Ezer Kenegdo, our warrior, the superhero who dwells within by God, our inner God-given strength. We are life givers, all of us. Now, you know that there are other creation stories. There are other creation stories. There's a whole lot of fruit on the tree of knowledge and science. And one of them has Eve, the DNA Eve, the one whose story echoes down through all of us and our DNA. The Eve that is the part of us and all of our cells with the part of the cell passed on from mother to child down through the ages. Our universal ancestor common to all of us, coming out of Africa some 150,000 years ago. That would make me, well, again, old as dirt. But it certainly would make sense as well, since near as I can figure, every single woman in the Bible is a woman of color. Now think about that. And while you're thinking, let's just say the Eve of your understanding smiles at you this day, her children, all of you, and leaves you not with a curse, but with a challenge. What are the things that give life to you? And in turn, what are the things that you give life to? What are the possibilities being born into this world through you? And while you're at it, remember the days of running around naked with God.